Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner. Sometimes I feel like my only friend is the city I live in, the city of angels. The only as I am, together we cry.
Thanks, Jason. Yeah. That was great.
Good.
That's one cat who does not look like his age, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't
What's
know.
He drinking? I don't understand what Anthony is drinking, man.
It must have been something back in the day.
Probably, so. But that kid, like, he just looks young, man.
Yeah, and ripped.
He's older than me. I think he's pushing 60, isn't he?
Probably, yeah. And they're still good.
Good for him.
Yep.
So, kids, do a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
Drink a lot of alcohol and do a lot of drugs, man. Yeah. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Yeah, thank you.
Great to have you in the studio here.
Yeah.
We were chatting for a little bit and wanted to get you on the show so we could talk about your biz and where you came from and stuff like that. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Great.
That's home.
Yeah. It's a nice little studio you got here.
Thanks. So, I like it. It's a nice little home.
Yeah.
I got so used to, I know most of the time people are sitting there a little nervous, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like cameras and light and everything like that. But we're just talking shit.
Yeah.
That's all it is, basically.
That's good for a Wednesday.
Yeah. We got Jason Ferris here from Glenmore Custom Homes. You can get them on IG at Glenmore Custom Homes. His email is jason.ferris, F-A-R-R-I-S, at glenmorecustomhomes.com. And then his phone number is 647-332-5516. I want to do a quick shout to Jason Guest, Guest Contracting. That's the tee that I'm wearing today. I also want to do a little shout out to Kim Studham. She sent me a message and she was just asking me a question. Hey, Manny, longtime listener and Design Plus GC. Reverse, mom and pop shop. I run the field, client relationship, final designs, sourcing, and my husband is in the office doing the books, marketing, sales contracts, and through schematic design. And we have decided to shut down the business for a year, during which we'll travel but generally focus our physical mental, and rational health, right? And I was like, that's a smart move. Running a business can take its toll, as we know. We're both turning 50 this year and celebrating our 29th wedding anniversary. Seemed like a good time. All that is to say I'm looking to take a bit of a solo time between when we shut down and when we start our first trip. I'm considering a drive up to Canada. We're based in Minneapolis and over to your neck of the woods. Any recommendations? So I told her a few places to stop by, and she's actually heading, I guess, up here to Toronto and then going east first. So obviously I said, stay away from Toronto.
Yeah.
And then I said, if you want, go to Prince Edward County.
Yeah.
You'll like it there, Bancroft, kind of things like that. And I said, just kind of follow your way around there and go east. And then once you hit Montreal, go through.
Yeah.
Keep on going. But no, it was cool. Yeah, exactly. Just get there for a little visit, get some gas, and then grab a few things. But it was good to hear from her and just talk. So I like getting some messages every so often and just got to catch up with them. That's it. So, hey, architects and builders, do you want to stand out from the competition? Fraser Wood Siding has your back. Fraser Wood Siding is a leader in pre-finished wood siding. They manufacture beautiful pre-finished wood siding using only the highest quality PEFC certified Canadian softwood. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Supplied by the global leader in paints, Sherwin-Williams. Whether your design taste is classic, contemporary, conservative, or bold, they've got you covered. They'll gladly match the color of any paint manufacturer and send a sample on an actual piece of Fraser Wood Siding in just a few days. Visit their website at www.fraserwoodsiding.com and reach out about your upcoming projects to benefit from their industry-leading lead times. Fraser Wood Siding, get inspired. Looking for cutting-edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than Elastichem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over three decades, Elastichem stands as an industry-leading supplying contractors across Canada with top-grade closed-cell, open-cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed-cell product. Time is precious, and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by Elastichem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. This podcast is brought to you by Redmond Distributing, a proud family-owned and operated HVAC supplier, serving Ontario for the past 22 years. With warehouses conveniently located in both Mississauga and Ottawa, They specialize in providing premium HVAC and hearth equipment across the region. Redmond Distributing is committed to supporting HVAC businesses with their dedicated customer service, reliable warranties, free training sessions in their operational facility, inventory management, and free delivery to most locations in Southern Ontario. For a partnership with true HVAC equipment specialists, choose Redmond Distributing. Explore more at www.redmonddistributing.com. Are you looking for a sustainable and durable real wood solution to elevate your next project? Let me introduce you to the gold standard. Thermery, the world's largest and most trusted manufacturer of thermally modified wood and sauna materials. Their wood is like the superhero version of regular wood, stronger, more stable, and ready to take on whatever Mother Nature throws its way. With a wide range of thermally modified wood products from decking and cladding to sauna and statement walls, when you choose Thermery, you're not just investing in quality, you're investing in the health of our planet too. Join countless architects, designers, builders, and homeowners who have trusted Thermery to bring their vision to life. The best way to fully experience the Thermery difference is to hold the real thing in your hands, so visit their website today at www.thermeryusa.com and also find them on IG at ThermeryUSA. Contractors, it's time to empower your business with Shelta Tech implementation. Shelta is offering a free meeting to tackle your biggest pain points head on. Their goal, to develop a custom company app that's built just for you, solving your pain points, streamlining your processes, making your workday smoother. Here's the scoop. There's a $15,000 digital adoption grant available, and Shelta is an expert at helping you secure it. This isn't just funding, it's your stepping stone into a new era of digital efficiency. By your second meeting, you'll get a tailor-made company playbook, a software prototype designed with your input, project tracking, real-time budget management, and daily logs, all integrated into a single app. It's tech that works for you, not the other way around. Shelta isn't just offering tech, they're offering transformation. Join the community of 93 subcontractors who have already stepped up their game with Shelta Tech. Two meetings, countless opportunities, ready to make a move? Visit shelta.app. Let's pave the way to smarter, tech-driven future. Shelta Technology, custom tech solutions for the modern contractor. But over to you now, Jason. You were saying off mic before we got started, you started in Tool and Die?
Originally, yeah, I started Tool and Die early 2000s. Did the apprenticeship and all that stuff, and then 2008 hit and kind of ruined the manufacturing side of things.
Yeah,
recession back then. Yeah, and a lot of the stuff ended up going to China, and so trying to find jobs to keep businesses busy, where it was pretty tough.
What age? So that would have been what?
I would have been in my early 20s.
Okay. At the time. All right. A couple of decades ago.
Yeah. A little bit. So, but yeah, so that, industry kind of dried up a bit, and then, got into kind of had an opportunity from a friend's dad to get into the cabling side of things for commercial. So we did the TIFF light box center, a couple of the borders where we ran the cables, fiber optics and stuff like that.
Spaghetti.
Yeah.
Lots of.
Yeah.
So, how do you do that? Like, it's just, it looks like spaghetti to me. It's like such control chaos.
Yeah, they all have their runs. So we follow electricians.
Okay.
They run their piping and all that first, and then they run the piping for us. Some of the floors in the TIFF light box were floating floors. So you just lift up the tile and you can pull all your wires through there and do your terminations where you need to. And then, yeah, down in the control room, it's just chaos there. So
can imagine.
Yeah. Trying to understand what the colors or different colors of the wires mean and all that stuff is,
it takes experience. We've seen the Cat 6 runs coming down to the mechanical area or by the panel.
Yeah.
And that's probably what I'm going to guess 50 or so runs maybe in a typical home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that place has got to be like thousands.
Right? Oh yeah. There's thousands. There's massive pipes and stuff like that. And they run for, I think, max, you can run fiber optics about 300 feet. So that, no, so your run could be up to about 300 feet somewhere throughout the building, up in the ceiling and the floors. So trying to trace it all is a little tricky. But
what happens when you get a kink coming out of the box?
You got to pull it back and figure out what.
And then figure it out?
Yeah, figure it out. Depending on how many cables you're pulling, sometimes you'll have a tugger at the other end. And then you just lube it up with all that paste and hope it doesn't get stuck in the pipe somewhere or there's a bad bend. So.
How many years did you do that for?
That was about 2 years. And then I got an opportunity to do estimating at another tool and die company. And so I took that and ended up working with a bunch of people that I'd worked with in the past and did that. And then we made a decision to move to Calgary for a few years with my wife. We were dating at the time and she got a teaching job out there. And so I said, well.
So this would have been 2010.
10-ish? Yeah, 2012, I think, 12? Somewhere around there.
Okay.
Yeah. So we ended up going out there and worked out west for a bit in the transmission distribution industry. And got to see how they design and build transmission substations, all that stuff. And
wow.
And it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see the tower standing there, you don't think much of it, but the actual amount of work that goes into it and, you know, you're 300 kilometers of transmission line. So there's a whole part of it of going through people's property, negotiating with them, how much you want for us to put a tower on your property, different things like that. And then you send the guys out there and they got to work there in the cold and no washrooms, nothing, just in the middle of the bush. So
yeah,
it's pretty interesting industry. And we got to learn how to you know, convert DC to AC electricity, all that stuff. And depending on how far your transmission lines are running, DC is better. And DC also means double circuit, so there could be two circuits per tower. So
okay.
Yeah, so there's a lot to learn.
So there's a lot of education there.
Yeah.
How many years did you do that for?
I was there for 3 years. And then
cold, no?
Colder? It's dry. Like, okay. Alberta is a dry climate, so you don't feel the cold like you do here. You know, when you get off the airplane coming back for Christmas or something like that, it's -5, you're like, oh, man, you feel it. Out there, you're in a T-shirt at -5, and it's sunny, and then you get a Chinook every once in a while, and everything melts. And
yep.
So it's a bit different. It's drier. The further north you go, it gets cold. Fort McMurray and north of that, it's brutal.
How far is Fort McMurray?
So you're 3 hours to Edmonton from Calgary, okay. And then I think you're another 3 hours from Edmonton to Fort McMurray.
That's not too bad.
No. So, okay. But it definitely changes up there. So.
Are the people in Calgary? Nice folk?
A lot of them are from Ontario, so it's kind of the same people.
Okay.
But there is, it's different culture there. There's more of a lifestyle. It's not as busy. A lot of people would, on the weekends, they want to leave downtown, whereas Toronto, everyone goes downtown to party and have fun and go to the restaurants. I found a lot of people out there, they'll take hook up their RV and they'll travel to Shuswap or they'll go to BC on a long weekend.
Discover.
Yeah, they go out there with their ATVs and stuff, and they'd rather do that than, you know, go downtown Calgary and sit in a restaurant and, you know, waste time. So
I assume that's probably multiplied since then to now.
Well, he had a bit of an exodus there in 2015, because it's very cyclical there, right? Like they had the 80s where they had a big, you know, bust.
Yeah.
And then things came back, and then you had the big boom in the early 2000s. And then around 2015, the oil industry kind of started drying up a bit.
The oil sands, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And they have like a +15 that connects all the buildings there.
Okay.
And before 2015, you couldn't walk anywhere without bumping into somebody. And then there was points in time where I'd walk it and I wouldn't bump into anybody. It was just things had dried up that much. And so they're coming back now and things are getting better. My sister still lives out there. Yeah, it's a nice place to live. But, you know, we had kids coming and family's more important. My wife's Portuguese, so having the mother-in-law around is very important. So,
well, it's very important to her.
yeah.
Otherwise, you get some.
You get some heat.
Some heat, quite yeah. a bit of heat, yeah. enough to melt Calgary.
Yeah.
I'm assuming the oil sands are still there's still oil there.
Oh, there's tons. Yeah, it goes right across to Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a whole area, but it's been, you know,
decommissioned.
It's not decommissioned. It's still pumping. There's still projects on the go. It's just. That's been named dirty oil, right? So we've got the whole environmental, you got Leonardo DiCaprio saying climate change is caused because of the Chinook he experienced and things like that.
What's the carbon footprint of Leonardo DiCaprio dating on women half his age?
jumping on one of his planes and flying across the world to tell everybody they're back.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I know that he shows up in his Tesla, or not a Tesla, he does hybrids. He does Toyota hybrids or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But yet he's on yachts, he's on planes, he's all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So
do we really want to listen to that? Yeah.
No, but it's such a shame because I know that we have such amazing resources here, right in Canada, and Canada could be such a such an amazing nation, but that's a different argument.
And we have companies like Suncor, Canadian Natural Resources, and they have the engineers working there, you know, to do the carbon capture and to produce oil as clean as possible. Our oil is heavier up there. It's not a light crude like Middle East and stuff like that. But we do, like, their engineers are working constantly to improve efficiencies and the reclamation of process if there is an oil spill is pretty insane in Alberta. They're pretty hardcore about removing the soil and making sure that you have the exact same soil going back in the same place. You can't just take soil from Saskatchewan and put it back there. You got to, you know, source it from that area.
Yeah.
So there's a whole process to everything that you don't see and you don't hear about. And, you know, any oil spill is bad, but there's a way of cleaning it up. And
I know there's a company that I've been trying to get on the show. I think they're called Huron Energy.
Okay.
They're out west there.
Yeah.
And they've perfected a way to, like, clean it right to zero.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to get them on the show to talk about it because, I mean, this is right in our own backyard where they're doing it. They're just, they're not creating this carbon footprint at all.
Yeah.
By their product, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's interesting.
And our, like some of the old telephone poles, they used to be soaked with creosote.
I remember those days. Yeah.
So I know they do, some companies there, they have aerators and they aerate the soil to get rid of some of the contamination. So
yeah,
there are people working on it and stuff. It's just,
aren't they still doing that now?
Putting the creosote?
Yeah.
No, it's different.
They got rid of it.
Yeah. You can't do that stuff anymore. When you remove those poles, they have to be excavated, reclaimed. Like the whole soil has to be
far out. Are you,
depends on the contamination, right? You have the soil engineers going in and
wow,
those people, it's a big process and, it's very expensive.
So you were privy to all, like you were part of that.
Yeah. Because some of the transmission lines that we're doing, we're replacing older ones, trying to, you know, go for a 50 year, 75 year lifespan. So a lot of these transmission lines, you know, communities are growing. And so we're trying to deliver the power, replace and repair some of the transmission lines. And mm-hmm. so part of that, the scope of work would be to remove these posts and make sure the soil is not contaminated. So there's a whole process to it. And, you know, when you go into wetlands and stuff like that, they have to have engineers go in and, you know, tell you what type of life, wildlife is in that area and
yeah.
and all that stuff. And so it's pretty interesting. Learned a lot about electricity, that's for sure. It's
educational. Like it's got to be a class every day, right?
Oh, pretty much. And we did a walk through one of the substations there, and one of the master electricians, he has a key for AltaLink, which is kind of like our Hydro One.
Okay.
And he just walked through and he showed us everything, where the power comes in, what the transformer goes to and all that stuff, and how they convert the from DC to AC. You have converter substations that are like the size of a football field. And the amount of equipment that has to go in there is insane. So, and then some of the transformers they're so big that some of the cranes can't lift them. So they have to do a walking process where they jack and roll, and they'll lift up
pyramids.
They have to lift up the one end, put wood under, and they walk everything to the substation. Where the pad is.
How heavy are we talking about? Like, I mean, you're talking about crane or helicopter, they can't lift?
Like some of the cranes, I don't know if Mammal would have a crane big enough, but some of them are so heavy and without fluids in them that you actually have to walk and roll these things to the pads. And then the pads themselves are built to have 110% of to hold 110% of the fluid, the oil that's in the transformer. So
how thick is that pad?
Well, it's, I forget how thick it is.
The weight of it, right?
Yeah, it's thick, and I want to say the MPA is around like 45, 50 MPA, so it's pretty strong. And then there's a company out of Barrie called Allberry, and they make, what's it called? Water, like a retention system. So if whatever reason the transformer overheated and spilled the oil, and if it rained, that 110% would, you know, take the oil plus the rain and contain everything. Yeah, contained, so you don't have oil spreading everywhere and catching fire. And
wow, next time you're driving by and you're seeing these, you're like, pay attention to everything that's around what's going on.
Yeah.
It's not just that.
It's not just a bunch of machines behind a fence.
And yeah.
Then there's a whole grounding grid, which is a specialized engineer that a lot of them are just, they specialize in in grounding, and that grid goes outside the fence and everything. So if there's a lightning strike or a short or something like that, everyone's protected. So yeah, so it's there's lots that go into a substation and lots of planning. They use LIDAR for the transmission lines to make sure they go the right way. And so yeah, it's and their projects are, you know, they have $100 million budget, but it's plus 20 minus 15 kind of PPS. And then once you get going and you realize, oh, this is wetland and stuff, and
it slows you down.
But that's usually how they work, because it's too much information and guessing to go, you know, 200 kilometers and say, oh, there's wetland here, this is soil, this is like, what are they have a, like a sand out there that's extremely hard to drill through in some areas of Calgary.
Okay.
So it's very difficult to, you know, put that into your estimate and guess, like, you know, over 200 kilometers, how are we going to know what type of soil condition we're in? Well,
you're pretty much the first ones that are digging through there, right?
Well, when you got to put the reference. When you put the PPS together, it's kind of like we think it's going to cost this much. Mm. And it never does. But it's we think, you know, this transmission line based on something that we've done, you're $130,000 a kilometer or something like that. And so that's where you start, and then you start doing some of the engineering work, the soil testing, all that stuff, and then you start narrowing down your estimate to being like, okay, it's going to be closer to this. And but that initial PPS is to say to AltaLink or Hydro One, we think it's going to be about this much. So, and that's when they start putting the money together and saying, okay, this is our budget, this is our range, and this is how long it's going to take. And it can take a couple of years, it can take 10 years. So there's one transmission line out there. By the time I got working on it, I think it was around 8 years it was in the process of just planning. So it takes a long time. That was 300 kilometers from so Calgary to Edmonton.
Yeah.
And it was a 500 kV line. And it was just, you know, all those years. So it took about 10 years of planning. I think the initial or original or the final budget was $1.4 billion for a transmission line.
Am I fair to assume that the material that you're using for all of this stuff is all Canadian made?
No.
Or is it just sourced out from all over the place?
It can be sourced out from everywhere.
Well, the lines themselves and everything like that.
Those come from specialized companies like Southwire. And there's certain companies that specialize specifically in the reels and underground cabling and all that stuff. And so you'll send out an estimate to, or a proposal to those companies and say, you know, how much for this and that. And then they'll give you the price for that. And then all their extra costs, if you need to have someone come and terminate the cable, the rental car, the hotel room, the food, all that stuff has to go into your budget to get these guys out there. And so
it's a little different than going in and buying a spool of 14-2.
Yeah, yeah, or a couple 2x4s, yeah.
And you did that for 3 years?
Yeah, that was 3 years there. I worked at the one company had a scandal with Gaddafi, so they kind of shut down. I don't know if you remember that story, but
no.
The Montreal engineering firm.
Okay,
well, SNC-Lavalin, they...
really? Yeah. Well, that's kind of funny, because you're in the same backyard as the Dirty Oil, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which our lovely leader's family is owning a lot of Saudi oil. So why would you want to build the infrastructure in Canada when you're profiting from infrastructure that's coming out of Canada?
Well, the whole process, I guess, was there was payments made under the table. And from my understanding, if you want to work in certain countries, it's just a normal practice, but this company got caught. And so the backlash was they ended up having to, you know, pay some fines, I think, and the workforce shrank right away. So,
but it's still amazing that, like, when most people drive by this infrastructure being built in this, in any city, any country, you're seeing a group of people that are in their large orange overalls, you know, whether they're thicker and thinner, depending on the season.
Yep.
And there's purpose behind all those people. Like, there's a lot going on, a lot of thought process going on, a lot of physical work going on, a lot of mental thinking going on, right?
Yeah, a lot of mental thinking, you know, climbing up those towers is not easy.
Yeah.
They do a lot of where the helicopters, Swarovski ones, come in and they drop the towers together.
I've seen the videos on social.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. I would never go up there, but
So there's that. And can you imagine doing some of that stuff out in BC in the mountains? And it's pretty wild. So
And you get on the radio, and there's a bear coming.
Yeah, there's a bear coming. Climb up the tower.
We got a bear about 1,000 feet away from us.
Yeah, everyone up the tower.
Yeah, well, so. that's just like, is it bear or is it bear? Like, you know, like it could be a guy that's named Bear or something. Yeah, no, but I mean, like, yeah, that's the risks that you're out there because you're literally stepping foot for the first time building this infrastructure. And now you've got to deal with, I mean, nature is there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not moving.
No. Yeah. You're stepping on their toes, right?
Yeah.
And they're probably just looking at you going, what are they doing now? Yeah, right? Yeah. Wondering that kind of stuff. But so that was a great experience. Like, I mean, you didn't really learn to do that. You just learned while you were doing that, right?
Yeah. So I worked for the company that was, or the estimating side of things. And then when we were doing the estimate, we go out to site and watch all this stuff happen. And you bring in some of the more experienced guys that are, off the tools, and they're more like a site super, and they explain everything that happens to you. And then you walk around, you see things, they do an implosions for the transmission line. So when you want to run out of a reel, you just need to start another one.
Okay.
You have this box with explosions inside, and they implode it, and that heats the connection.
Fuses it together.
Fuses everything together.
A little mini explosion.
Yeah, well, it's pretty big. It'll scare you. But it's in a box, and then they sound the horn to the trucks to let everybody know it's going to go off in a few seconds. And then there's a big boom, and the reels are connected together and carry on and start the...
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I guess my thought process was like two giant Moretz.
Yeah.
Really, that's not the case, right?
No, because it's like steel and aluminum. So there you got a steel line in the middle, and then it's wrapped with aluminum on the outside.
You got to fuse it together.
Yeah, and then those fuse together, and that continues the line when you're going straight. And then you have like different types of posts, tangents and dead end posts and all that stuff.
How was that experience for you to do the first time to see that?
Oh, it scared me. I just heard the trucks honking. Yeah, I got out of my car and trucks are honking their horn, and all of a sudden this boom goes off. Get back in the car. So
how much time did they give you? Enough to get to the car?
They didn't even tell us. So we just showed up on site seeing these guys working, and we had no idea they were doing it. And I just remember hearing the horn of the truck.
Another day at the office, huh?
Yeah, just another day at the office, and we're just watching to see how things are going, and all of a sudden the boom goes off. And
is anybody there standing with a stogie and just look back to it or whatever and just looking cool or something like that? Those are some social media opportunities there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, but yeah, no, it was a good experience, and then we ended up moving back to Ontario. And
so this would have been
2015, 2016, we moved back to Ontario.
Okay.
And then decided, you know, I might take some of the skills that I've learned over the years and start my own
custom homes.
Well, that's the point I want to get to.
Okay.
While I was out in Calgary, I also did some framing for homes down in the South End. And so I've always been in the construction side of things. So I just said, you know, take my experience. Working for the companies are great or whatever, but as soon as something goes wrong at the top you have no control over, you're out of a job.
Basically.
So, yeah.
So you're a number at that point.
Yeah. So same with the second company I worked for. They had moved up from the US, and the people running the upper part of the company were just, they had all the letters behind their name, but couldn't put anything together. And so the head office in the States was like, all right, you know what? We're shutting this down. So everybody, you know, that got hired there was gone, and they had to find jobs again.
I think we should start putting our names on our business cards, and then right after our names put like a shovel, hammer, saw.
Yeah.
And those are equivalent to the letters behind the names, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That way we seem important.
Because I'm pretty sure the people with those letters behind their names don't know how to use a saw, shovel, hammer.
No. They know how to use Excel.
Yes.
And make PowerPoint.
They're important too.
Yeah.
But the workforce is very important too.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's a team.
Yeah. But it'd be nice to have field guys in the office doing some of that work and understanding, you know, well, this is the actual process, and this is how long it should take to do something.
Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody at the top wants to figure out what their margins they need to make or whatever, that's fine. But it'd be nice.
When you whittle it down to a person is a number.
Yeah.
It's just weird to me. Like, you're looking at a spreadsheet and you see all these numbers, and they're all employees. They're all different trades or whatever. And they're just a number. They're just bought down to a number.
Pretty much their experience and how valuable they are to the company. And when you need to start cutting, you look at the ones that, you know, we don't really need.
Where can we trim?
Yeah, pretty much.
How were the trades out west? Pretty much the same as trades here?
Pretty much. You can always tell which guy's a trades guy and which one's a office guy.
Okay.
Yeah, normally office guys are always clean cut and stuff like that. And the trades guys usually have their beards but they're level headed, right? Like they don't, you don't get into conversations about, you know, like success stories of what they've done every day. It's just like they have conversations about normal life. So I find like when you're talking to tradespeople, it's more conversations about other important things. It's not so much about work, unless you're meeting guys for the first time and you have nothing in common, then you'll chat about work. But
yeah,
for the most part, I find people that I know, we don't really talk about work that often. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, I went to work today, did my job, and that's where it stays. Talking about
like just kind of minor interests, like family, like
yeah, family interests, what you're doing this weekend, you know, like, you know, you see the Leafs play last night, you know, stuff like that. I find whenever I walk into, you know, rooms where there's, I don't know, lawyers and stuff like that, or you know, white collar people, they're usually talking about all their projects they're working on and how busy they are.
Yeah. It's construction weather talk.
Yeah.
It's completely like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather know about the person, right?
Yeah. There's no attachment to that at that point.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, you don't connect with the person really. It's just surface. So, yeah. So they find like when you talk about other things, you kind of relate to, they have kids. I have kids, you know, like I need to, you know, figure out, should I buy a truck or a new work van? Because if I have a work van, I can't pick up the kids. You know, there's certain things in life that you have to think about, and you bounce those ideas off other people sometimes. And
there's purpose behind the conversation.
Yeah.
So instead of motive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're not trying to figure out each other's length of your dick and stuff like that.
Well, it's interesting because I think that tradespeople all across this nation, they'll voice their opinion about the political agenda, climate, whatever you want to call it, right? Yeah. But they still contribute to the hardworking mentality.
Yeah.
Right? They're still a force to be reckoned with, and they're still like providing for their family, their loved ones, and earning their pay, right?
Yeah.
And they take a lot of pride in that, which is really good. It's unfortunate that they're being taken advantage of, right? Just by systems or whatever's going on, right? Yeah. But like I keep on going back to, Canada could be such a huge, thriving nation.
Yeah.
We could be a lot bigger, a lot better, a lot more on the global stage. We could be leading so many things regarding construction and just ideas. We could be trying new things, new techniques, all kinds of stuff. Like there's lots of land here to try this stuff, right?
Yeah.
But we're not, because it's people are getting caught in the cookie jar kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And people that are not on the ground.
Yeah. And the red tape that you have to get through all this stuff. And, you know, any pipeline that needs to be built is just getting shut down. And so you have people with the whatever interests in mind, they don't care how it affects you or your family or anybody in the communities and stuff like that. And so when you have that issue to go up against, it makes things very hard to pursue a career in trades and stuff like that. So even building these homes in Ontario that we're missing, like, when's that going to happen?
You know? Well, it's funny you bring that up. And I mean, I'm like, I'm just going to let this conversation go where it goes, right? And it's just, I find it fascinating. But it's just, I wanted to share Daniel, he's been on the show, Daniel Foch. He did a post where shortage of skilled tradespeople, you can find him on IG under Daniel_Foch, which is F-O-C-H. And he did a post just this morning saying shortage of skilled tradespeople is hitting all Canadians in the pocketbook, economists say, right? Mm-hmm. And I basically left a comment. I had some time to write this one. It's not a shortage. It's the gatekeeping from the government and the useless programs that are designed to check boxes and ignore the real tradespeople that want to succeed and build businesses. The real question isn't how do we get more people into skilled trades. The real question is how do we keep them? They are leaving faster than they are retiring, and that is due to politicians in suits that have never been on a job site telling hardworking tradespeople what they are allowed to do when it comes to hiring and training. Start by asking tradespeople how to solve the shortage, and politicians might actually learn a thing or two. Oh, and by the way, politicians getting into the trades and keeping them into the trades has nothing to do with your political views on the current month, right? Yeah. And then I just ended it by saying, start with a mentorship program where the government pays for retired or soon-to-be retirees trades to teach the next generation of trades. Give these retired tradespeople tax credits and so much more. The knowledge they have is what the next generation of tradespeople desperately needs. Solving the shortage doesn't require a single suit. It requires the construction industry to unite and support each other. We are on our own. We've always been on our own. And I left that, and I think it's like 30 likes or something like that. And I wanted to share my two cents because I've been big about that.
Yeah.
I just said we're missing a huge opportunity about all the retired trades that are leaving. We know what the ratios are,
How
many we lose, and then how many are coming in. And I'm like, these people don't want to be swinging the hammer anymore. They've earned their keep. They've done their 40-plus years or whatever. Yeah. They've built what they could build across this nation. Doesn't matter what promised territory you're in. But they still have the knowledge.
Yeah.
And I mean, elderly people, older people want to just be active.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when the construction, like I don't see myself, you know, if I'm 65,
you're going to want to teach, you're going to want to share.
Well, when I'm 65, I will still want to be working. Like I think, you know, not big, hard jobs, but I think something that gives me purpose to get out of bed every day. But you'll
crave the younger ones coming by you.
Yeah.
Asking you a question.
Yeah. It'd be nice if I can show them, you know, this is an easier way of cutting something or,
yeah,
you know, just simple little things like that. That'll help them along the way, speed the process up. And a lot of that I've learned is just by watching guys, you know, that have done, like watching framers that have done it for years. This is how they cut it. And this is, you know, how they measure things. And, you know, you put that into practice and you're like, oh, this is how it works, you know? So it's, you need those people around to carry that the mentorship and to keep the younger people going and interested in the jobs. So, but it's not a glorified industry, right? Like being a lawyer and all that stuff is glorified, right?
I think, I'm biased, right? Yeah. So it's like, I think it's a glorified, I think there's like all that stuff that you spoke about regarding the transmit and just towers and rural, like that's hardcore. Like that's actually fascinating stuff. That's really interesting stuff, more to me than lawyers, right?
And that's what keeps the country going, right?
Yeah.
You lose power, how do you service a hospital? You can't. So yeah, these people are very important to our economy and keeping things going. So it's, I don't know. I remember in high school, they took out our auto shop. I think we only had like a little wood shop.
What did they convert it into?
Computer space. So half of it was empty and half of it was like computers.
And there was like bolts coming out of the concrete or something that were holding machines before or something?
Yeah.
Or they grinded those down.
They got rid of those, but you used to... You used to be able to bring an old scrap car in and learn how to do an oil change and all that stuff and learn how electricity alternators work and little things like that. But they got rid of the automotive. They got rid of the dental room. They had, you know, all that stuff. And everybody got pushed to being, you know, go to university. Well, how many people can go to university, right? Like, not everybody.
Even back then, you couldn't really afford it. It was expensive.
Yeah. Right? But you've lost all those people. Like, same with the tool and die. Once that's died down, people are dying for tool and die makers now. All the ones that, you know, had the knowledge, knew the math to calculate 3D shapes and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Those guys are in their 50s, 60s now, retired, and, you know, there's not a ton of people in that trade anymore.
It's the knowledge.
Yeah.
It's the knowledge that I'm worried about that nobody's recording, nobody's capturing it, nobody's sharing it, like far and few. I mean, there are still some doing it, but we have too many coming in that need some guidance.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't think the late 20s, maybe mid 30s tradespeople are willing to do it or have interest in doing it. Because in my opinion, I think that they're planning on getting out by the time they're 40. I think a large chunk of them are like, I've been in this business for 20 years.
Yeah.
I've done my share. I built a business. I got a potential buyer to buy my business and then I'm gone and I'll go work on something else.
Yeah.
And then they won't be sharing their knowledge that they learned. Right.
Yeah.
Lost again.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's going to be like a cyclical thing where people start coming back into the trades a bit or not. But yeah, there's definitely a demand there. And you talk to plumbers and electricians. The plumber I use, he was like 1 week, he was like, yeah, I'm not sure what I'm going to have coming up. And then I talked to him the next week. He's like, yeah, we're booked out 3 weeks right now. And, you know, it's just, you know, you have 1 week off and then all of a sudden something pops up. But
how do you build a business that way?
Well, it's not always like that. It's just there was like this year was a bit weird for the people I've been talking to. Coming, you know, May onwards, everyone's going to be slammed. But this February, March is just quoting a lot of stuff, small little jobs here and there. And then it's just waiting for permits and all those other things. But the work's there. It's just, it's been a slow start to this year for a few people.
Do you think that the recent increase in capital gains for the budget, which is going to be implemented on June 25th, it's going to have any effect on construction? It's hard to say, right? Because it's not really...
I would say from somebody like the big planning side of things, the people that have those the big budgets to work with, the smaller people, are you making $250,000 a year in that range to profit?
No.
So it's probably more like larger projects, I think, that would impact a lot of people. It's not hard to reach $500 million in sales, but to actually profit $250,000,
yeah,
that might be a little bit trickier for, you know, like a one man show and stuff like that. So
I just, my concern is more about not so much that. It's the cancellation of certain high rise. The number keeps on increasing.
Yeah.
So when I'm watching high rise being canceled, projects not starting, it kind of tells me that it's going to filter down to regular residential construction.
Yeah.
Because then you got people that maybe can't move out just yet. They can't purchase that property yet.
Yeah.
So they have to wait a little bit longer. Or maybe on the flip side, it helps us because now if they're going to stay, then they might convert their basement into a second unit and then do that. So then now you have to do that for a little while, and that might be sales for people, right?
Yeah, it's a mix. Like there's going to be certain trades that are definitely impacted. I have phone calls from trades looking for work, and they're mostly coming out of like the Toronto area. So I'm not sure if...
Even like the plumbers, electricians, and HVAC?
Plumbers, electricians, every once in a while. Instagram, you'll get messages saying, you know, like, if you have any work, we'd like to work with you. There's, you know, generic messages.
Did any of that happen last year?
No. This year, it's happening more.
Yeah.
High rise, you probably will probably see the trickle-down effect, guys that work into that industry. But then you have the other side where people are looking at moving and saying, well, I sell a million here, I got to buy a million there. So, you know, like Barry right now, 4 bedrooms, you're $800,000-$900,000. So the years of living in Barry and buying for $250,000 and then traveling to the city, you save money there. You can't do that anymore. So, I have a customer or a client that's renovating their house right now, and they're living in Anton Mills, which is kind of Horseshoe Valley Road up in that area.
Okay.
And for them to sell, they're saying they're going to pay about $80,000 in fees and then find some other place. They're moving further north, or, you know.
The math doesn't work.
It doesn't work. So there might be that sector of people that are looking at that going, well, then let's just renovate and make this house ours. Like maybe do an addition or maybe finish the basement or do something.
Do you think that we'll start to see a generational building the kids will stay put, like maybe that the parents kind of move out and find something quieter in a different place, smaller, that they don't need, but then that dwelling isn't sold off to a stranger, it's actually kept in the family, and then the kids will inherit that and build that, right? But then there's taxes on top of that crap,
I guess you got to look at your primary residency and how that affects, you know, having a second house, and if that's... Because as soon as there's a transfer of names, it triggers
a tax.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's, you know, someone that's smart enough to figure out a planning way of putting a house in a business name or something.
Contender is talking about he's not just going to reduce carbon tax. He's going to start talking about reducing income tax, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at history, capital gains were increased. I think it was the 90s.
Yeah.
And then they brought them back down again, I think, with Harper. So it's just like, it's like a roller coaster in Canada, right?
It's never consistent. So it goes to show for the investment side of things why people are second guessing, you know, do we invest in Canada?
Well, I think a lot are not. I think they're taking off. They're looking elsewhere.
Yeah.
I think they're going down south, looking at opportunities there, but then they're also looking abroad.
Yeah.
Like it depends on your family. Your wife's Portuguese. I'm sure that there's some connection there in Europe, right? Yeah. So then that might be a possibility as well. So we don't know.
So totally different economy in Portugal too. So, There's like Magna's over in Portugal, the northern part. So big companies are moving around and they're picking out those spots that are more friendly to work in. And Canada's kind of got to change its act as a whole. Just, you know, what do we want Canada to look like in 10 years? So do you want people sitting at home on a social assistance, or do you want a country that's hustle and bustle? And, you know,
we used to be a country of hustle and bustle. We used to be a country of building so many things. The problem I have is that when I look at this site, like the skyline, it's just all condos, man.
Yeah.
It's all, it doesn't matter what, like, even I can't even recognize Vaughan.
Yeah.
Like I don't, and Mississauga is the same thing. And then Toronto is just, even when it was the late 80s, early 90s, and City Place started around Sky Dome, for everybody who's not familiar with it, before it was Rogers. Like, when they started proposing that 21, 23 tower thing, I just said, this is not going to be a very interesting looking city. This is going to be just pure congestion. Yeah. And then sure enough, that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah. Right? Like, when I moved back from Calgary and I drove down to the Gardner, and I looked,
you didn't
at all,
recognize it.
No, all of a sudden these condos are right on top of the highway. And I'm looking in people's bedrooms, and while I'm driving by, sitting in traffic, and I was like,
"You notice the dirt on those windows?
Yep.
They must clean those things every day."
Sorry. Yeah. Well, you got all the traffic going by, the, you know, exhaust and everything from the cars and the dust, and so I don't know.
You can't predict. I have no idea what it's going to look like. But the funny thing is that 20 years ago, I never thought it would look like this.
Yeah.
Not once did I ever think it was going to look like this.
Yeah.
You just assumed that you would have grown normally.
Yeah. Push things outside of the borders a little bit. You know?
Yeah.
I guess I'm not sure why business hasn't kind of expanded a bit. And
you can't house employees here.
Yeah.
You can't, like even if a business wants to come here and starts to build an infrastructure here, their workforce can't afford to be here.
Yeah.
Because if they can afford to be here, their salary is going to have to match that.
Yeah.
So it's like everyone's almost being pushed to the very edge of just under wealth.
Yeah.
Right. And all of a sudden you're paying that tax bracket now, which means that why am I going to go to work when I'm going to get taxed 53%, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm losing more than half of it. What's the point of doing that? Right.
Yeah.
And I'll just be honest. I mean, the more and more I'm having conversations with tradespeople, cash jobs.
Yeah.
And I'm not even frowning. I don't look at it as a negative.
Yeah.
I look at it as like, you're being smart.
Yeah.
I don't care how you look at it.
Yeah.
It's like, you're being smart, because what's the point of making everything totally legit on the books for a construction company when you know that a huge amount of it is going to be taken away from you?
Yeah. Well, it's, you got to be smart with, you know, the jobs and all that stuff. And you know, when someone's grabbing at it, you know, and you're not knowing where it's going, like, you don't see things improving.
No.
And you're saying, well, what am I paying these taxes for? What am I paying these fees to drive my car for? You know, stuff like that. I think a lot of people are wondering, like, where is this going now? You know, like, Ontario's 14 million people. And so your tax pool right there is probably pretty big. And your roads are like third world country roads in some areas. So, like, what's going on here?
How often do you guys talk about it as like a couple and as a family? Because I'm assuming that every couple tradespeople, they probably talk about it on a weekly basis, if not a daily basis, right? It comes up.
Oh, my wife goes, where's the money going? I thought you were working, is what I get. And I said, yeah, but I, you know, went to Costco and I had to get diapers and I had to get all this stuff. My one bill was $800 at Costco and my cart wasn't even full, you know? And on top of that, we still had to go out that week and buy, you know, some fruit here and stuff, because for whatever reason, fruit doesn't last anymore, like more than 2-3 days. So, but yeah, that was just like, that's where it's going. Gas.
It's scary. You
know, yeah. Like, I'm driving to and from Oakville right now for a few weeks here, and every 3 days, it's almost $160-170, something like that. So you're $300, let's say, a week just in gas there. And then, on weekends, you got to go places with your kids, putting, you know, another $100 in that car. So that's, you know, it goes quick. So it's, you're looking at your budgets, your estimates, and you're like, oh, that's a big number. But in hindsight, it's, you know.
But then you got your clients coming at you going, why is it costing so much?
Yep.
And then you're explaining to them that this is material costs.
Yeah.
And this is what it costs for these people to be here. Everyone's asking for more hourly because it's a reflection of what they have to show up on the job site. They're bringing their own vehicle. They're bringing their own gear and everything like that. And they're paying that $200 gas tank. Oh, yeah,
there's that. The tools, like tools have gone up insane.
Accessories, everything. Yeah,
everything is insane.
Everything.
So it's...
So that all just filters right down to the price that you submit to a client.
Yeah.
And then like, they're just like, this is ridiculous. 5 years ago, I remember doing a rental and it was half this price.
Yeah.
5 years ago, did we have what was going on right now? No.
No. Like the prices of shingles, like, you know, before the pandemic, you used to be able to buy the Owens Corning or Certainty.
What's a bundle?
Like shingles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it, like maybe?
23, 24 at the time.
What are they now?
43. And if you want the Landmark Pro, you're 50-something, you know, and you multiply.
Probably feels heavier too, eh, when you're carrying it.
Yeah. But it's just like, how did it double? It's the same product, you know?
Oil.
It went up a little bit.
What's barrel at right now? I don't know. I stopped paying attention to because I'm looking at the gas pumps. Yeah. All I know is diesel's a little bit less right now.
Yeah, that's. I don't even pay attention to the white price of oil. Just with all the issues in the world, I'm like, it's probably going to go up again. So is there any point looking at it today? Because tomorrow it might be $10 higher or whatever, and then the odd day it just drops.
Why? It must be kind of scary to be a young tradesperson just getting started and having that pull the trigger moment where I want to go on my own.
Yeah.
And if they actually took their interest to hire somebody to actually do a cost consultant and break it all down and go, listen, this is what it's going to cost for you to run a business.
Yeah.
This is what you're expected to bring in gross revenue. Yeah. And then this is potentially what your net's going to be at that point.
Yeah.
I don't think it looks attractive.
No, it doesn't. And the fact is, when you start off on your own, you might not have a job for 2-3 weeks. So how do you can't even follow that formula anymore. So it's going to be tough. Like there's still money out there to be spent. You can tell by the homes that are being built.
Yeah.
There's still money out there. Trying to find those customers is the trick. But yeah, it's tricky in the beginning because there's no guarantee the next day you're going to have a job. You might finish one and be happy, but then you sit there and go, well, when am I going to get the next one? So that's, you know, the starting out point is very tricky. And
the whole time you're working on that one, you're wondering about the next one.
Oh, yeah. You're wondering, you know, did they get the quote? Why haven't they got back to me on a next job or something like that?
Are we going to start it?
Yep.
What discount they're going to ask for?
Yeah, something like that. Oh, somebody else came in at this price. Can you match that? Or you know, whatever excuses. But yeah, it's tricky when you start out. I know some people have had success because they have friends in the industry that are able to make referrals or give them a job here and there to help out. And then, you know, that always helps getting the ball rolling. But if, you know, you move to a new area or something like that, you don't know anybody.
Start from scratch.
Yep. You're on Kijiji. You're wasting your time with those
customers.
You're
at the Costco. You're walking around. Yeah. You're going to kids' events and you're just introducing yourself. You're door knocking.
Yep.
That's the only way to start the ball rolling, right?
Yep. Yeah. And I would stay away from all those online marketing programs in the beginning. You know, I got caught in that one and it was expensive lesson. That's for sure.
You know about Homestars and stuff?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And
I think everyone knows how we feel about that place. Yep. So,
very expensive lesson that year.
Did you get the return on investment?
No, of course not.
Right.
You were just paying for a Kijiji customer is pretty much what you're getting.
Yeah. It was a race to the bottom.
Yep.
That's all it was. Right. Yeah, and if you want to be that contractor, listen, most likely you're not listening. Yeah. So they're not listening to this show. No. They're racing to the bottom. They're making whatever cake they can, and then they leave.
Yeah.
They don't care about quality. They don't care about anything like that. And they're probably showing up with really bad material that's left over from other job sites.
Possibly. Stolen.
Possibly, too. Yeah. Exactly, right? Yeah. I just found this back of the van.
Yeah.
This and a pair of speakers. You know what I mean? No. Yeah, and that's a shame. And then you try to be legit with clients.
Yeah.
You try to explain to them, like, this is legit. This is if you get three other legit contractors to give you a quote, we're going to be very all pretty close.
Yeah.
That's just reality.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it doesn't fit your line of credit or your budget that you thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
This is reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Google doesn't always have the answers for your budget, right?
I'm sure they're all jumping on ChatGPT now trying to ask, what should a rental three-piece bathroom cost if I use this kind of tile, this kind of whatever? What should a ballpark?
Yeah. And what city are you working in then? You know, what province are you working in? You know,
until you can introduce me ChatGPT and he's standing there on site with a hammer doing the work, I'm not going to validate that number, right?
Doing a washroom reno in Toronto on these old homes as opposed to, you know, Vaughan or Barrie on a new build, completely different, right? Like
what you find.
Yeah. What do you do?
What problems you find?
Do you have asbestos in these homes, right? Like that's, you know, something that's hidden in there sometimes. You don't know that. You can't go online and ask Google what the price for something is when it's totally different. You know, you got to compare apples to apples, and that's not happening. So,
are you, a majority of your clients, are they younger?
It's a mix.
Because when I got started, it was mostly older.
Yeah,
and then it started to shift to slightly younger.
It's a mix right now. There, a lot of them are older. Younger ones don't seem to have the budget for what they want. They got that Pinterest list.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you walk them through everything and you tell them, give them the price, and they go, oh, I guess maybe I'll be doing it myself. So
you ever met a client who's actually said, wow, okay, that's a really good price. Let's do it. Let's start. That's never happened in my world.
I think maybe for like a roof or something like that, they were like, okay, that's fine. Yep. Good. But other than that, no, it's always okay. We'll get back to you. So they always, you know, want to discuss stuff with their spouse or whatever, and then take that quote and compare it to somebody else's quote. I've had that, you know,
Google it, ChatGPT.
Yep. Yep. Or
Facebook group.
Or they do my quote and then they take that number and they go, oh, this guy quoted this, so can you match this or come in cheaper? You know, you have that stuff.
Now, why are they asking you to match it? Is it because they like your personality more than the other person, so they want you to do the job, but they just don't want to pay your dollar value. They want to pay the other guy's dollar value.
Most likely they want to pay the other guy's dollar value and get the same
get job. A better service from you, and they have a better feeling about you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work that way. You're at that price not because you're gouging. You're at that price because you've built this feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. So it happens. But then again, you know, if you're just starting out, do you negotiate with it and be like, kind of need this work? And then eventually over the years, you get to that point where you're like, I don't need this.
Those are the early years, right? Yeah. You gobble up anything at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So, and then eventually you just get to the point where you're just like, no, I've had it with this stuff. You know, this is my price. This is the job. This is, you know, how I'm going to do it and how I'm going to go about it. If you want to take care of the garbage, fine, whatever. I hated that. I know, but
I hated like micro splitting up crap.
Or I can paint this. We'll do the painting. Okay, whatever. You know, by the time we get to the painting, I'm out of here. And, you know, that's.
But then they're going to mess it up.
Yeah, but it's their house.
Then you can't photograph it. You can't use it as a piece to sort of sell it. You can just use it as memories, which I always hated that. Let's just hire the person. It's like you don't buy a car without the wheels or whatever because you found a nice set on Facebook group or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, marketplace.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that, and then I guess some people just, they don't see the value in spending the money, you know? They're just, well, I'll do it and it'll save me $500 to paint the bathroom or something, you know? So
it's just they want the deal. Doesn't matter how it's sliced.
Yep.
They just want to know that they had a deal.
Yeah.
So when they're talking with their friends, family, whatever, what do you think?
Yep.
Great. Well, we saved $2,000.
Yeah, yeah. Well, looks like it too. So, and then I also think it's a generational thing. Like my dad asked me to help him rebuild the deck at the cottage.
Okay.
So I said, okay, I went to Home Hardware, got the quote for the pressure treated decking. I think it was like $700 or $7,500 just for wood. And he had to sit down on the couch for a second. He's like, I only spent like $1,500 when I did this like 30 years ago. Right. So I think there's that generational gap there where they're, you know, people are looking at the numbers going, holy crap. Like they know things have gotten more expensive, but they don't see it or understand it until they actually see the numbers. And then they go, oh crap, this is pretty expensive. So,
but the really sad part is that the lumber has not gotten expensive because it's gotten expensive to mill and to produce and to package.
Yeah.
It's just pure greed still.
Oh yeah. It's like the shingles. Pure greed. You know, same shingle.
Why make a 20% profit when we can make a 40% profit?
Yeah.
They're going to buy it regardless. And right now, us being at the end of April, we're right into the start of deck season. Mm-hmm. And so you're already starting to see all the lifts, and then you're already starting to see the magic numbers that are associated with them.
Yep.
And these companies, they predict. They predict what the profitability is going to be like for the next season, the next deck season here, right?
Yep.
They'll make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because people will want those decks.
Yeah. There'll be customers out there willing to pay, and then there'll be other ones that are just, you know, can't do it. Sorry.
Wait till next year or something like that.
Yeah, save up a bit more. But it was just weird how 2x4s went from $3 to $14 and then back down to 3 something. It's like.
That was, for a fact, greed.
Yeah.
Like that, it was just greed.
Completely screwed over.
Yeah. You
know? Like, how does something, a commodity, jump that much when it's not even, it's not gold, it's not silver, right? Like.
Lots of people retired off of those jumps. And yeah. They weren't tradespeople.
No. There was somebody out there taking advantage of all this stuff. So, but yeah.
They weren't the only ones. There was lots. That's the thing about it. There was lots. And the unfortunate thing is that we as tradespeople couldn't price accordingly too. We couldn't jump our labor rates four times.
No.
Well, you were charging last year $50 an hour for any kind of labor, yeah. Tradesperson, whatever. You couldn't turn around and go, oh, by the way, he's 200 now.
Yeah. Be nice.
Be great.
Yeah.
But they would making like, saving a lot of money, but there's no client in hell would ever pay that. They would never agree to it. What's your hourly rate? That's insane.
Yeah, that's insane, but we'll pay $14 a 2x4.
For 2x4. Yeah. For 1 2x4. 1 2x4 by 8 feet.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Lumber packages double, sometimes tripled.
Yep.
It was just making hand over fist. It was amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing, right?
Yeah.
And then we get blamed.
Yeah. And then I get price notifications. Just got one yesterday. CGC products are going up again for 8% May 1st. And it's just like, how can we this continuously happen? Like every few months, I know there's a carbon tax increase and stuff like that. But at some point, how am I going to sell your jobs if your prices keep going up? How am I going to be able to sell a job and use your products when people are just going to say, okay, it's getting a little too crazy right now? So
I got some insider on that. CertainTeed bought Bailey.
Yeah.
So the price of corner beads going to go up.
Yeah.
And then CGC is launching their own corner bead.
Okay.
So they've got their line, which is sheetrock, which is the paper corner bead.
Yeah.
But they're releasing their own corner bead to compete against the new version of Bailey.
Yeah.
And they're both going to be expensive. So a little corner bead metal, the price is going up.
Perfect.
Is Trimtex in their corner bead? Not exactly sure if they're going up. I don't know. I can only assume. Plastic, Trimtex, petroleum. So I'm guessing maybe go up. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't priced out any Trimtex yet for a few weeks, but I haven't seen an enormous jump in it. So, but yeah, if you start having to pay like $15 for a corner bead one day, it's going to be.
What is a corner bead metal right now? Well, that was like $4, no? Or more expensive. I think
six. Six or seven is what I saw at Home Depot. But it's a bit cheaper if you go to like the supplier, like CRS and stuff like that.
Yeah. You save a little bit of bucks because you're going there.
Yeah. If you do a whole package and stuff, but even like the mud's going up, machine mud. I think you're into the 40 something, high 40s now. I think for machine mud. So it's that stuff all used to be in the 30s. I remember mud used to be about $20-$25 a box.
Everything used to be so cheap.
Oh right? Yeah. Well. Yeah, it's not cheap, but it was cheaper.
Everything used to be reasonable.
Yeah, yeah.
You understood it.
Yeah.
And if you were to look at graphs, you would see a steady climb.
Yeah.
We didn't see this massive peak go up, right?
Well, what's a sheet of drywall now? $16, 4x8? Used to be $7.99, $8.99.
The plywood was the best. 3/4 plywood.
Yeah.
Where it was just getting up, and then it was over 100.
Yeah.
Just under 100.
Yeah.
Plywood.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was insane, right?
Yeah. It's... you know, when you're doing a whole house or something like that and you want 3/4-inch floors, that adds up quite pretty.
It adds up quite a bit.
Yep.
So, and then how long have you been doing the Glenmore?
7 years now.
7 years now.
Yeah.
You have employees or is all
no,
subs?
No, I do some subs that I have. We're both kind of, doing the same thing. So I sub out all my electrical, plumbing and all that stuff. And then the framing, finishing, all that stuff I do myself. And if it's a bigger job, then I bring in another guy I know, and he helps me do all that stuff. So, seems to be working out well. And then you don't have to worry about employees not, showing up and all these other issues. And
I agree. So, makes sense. Yeah.
But yeah, it's, at some point I'll probably have to get, a younger guy in there to help do all the cleaning up and all that stuff along the way. But, I've tried before hiring guys and, you give them $200 on a Friday, you never see him again. So, I had one guy start convulsing in a customer's basement, and this was the eye opener to. I think this was my second or third year, and I ran out to the store, grabbed some HVAC stuff, came back, went looking for the guy, and I said, "Hey, I'm in here." And he goes, "Where are you?" I'm like, "I just walked past you." And 2 seconds later, he's on the floor convulsing. So I'm like, what the heck is going on here? So I end up calling the ambulance and fire department, all that stuff. And he finally came to. And I was kind of worried. I was like, was he going to start fighting me? Because these people, when they come out of their convulsion, they're either, you know, hysterical sometimes or angry. And so I had no idea what was going to happen. But luckily the fire department showed up and they had to bring down a wheelchair, get the guy in there. And then he started laughing and then he was crying and then he peed his pants. And I said, all right, well, this is the last time I'm going to have somebody working with me for a while.
How long is he working for you?
Two, three months.
And just out of the blue?
Just out of the blue. I understood he had like an interesting background and all that stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, I left him alone on the house for, you know, 15 minutes and come back and all that stuff's happening. So
he was fine the moment you stepped in. Yep. He was talking to you. He was yelling somewhere.
Well, yeah, he was yelling and I had just walked past him and I go, hey, can you come over in here and help me? And he goes, where are you? I just walked by you.
And then it happened.
And then it happened. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what happened when I was gone or whatever, but that was, you know, an eye opener to having an employee. So,
well, you're trade sitting, right? So it's like you're inheriting what they've done.
Yeah.
Right. And then you don't really know because people always put a filter on.
Yeah.
So you don't really know, but I guess you get certain people that come into the industries taking advantage of the situation.
Yeah.
If they can.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of people that show up and they say, oh, you know, I need to find a job. And there's one guy I also had, he was turning his life around apparently. And now he's on the run from the cops and there's a warrant for his arrest. So that was 3-4 years ago.
Was that on his resume?
No,
found that out eventually?
No, it was from a friend. A friend said, hey, this guy, he's looking for work. And so I had him cleaning up, I took down a deck and I was like, okay. And of course he needed $100 at the end of the day. So gave him the money cause he was going to come back the next day for sure. And, sure enough, didn't show up. And then the guy told me later, he's like, yeah, bail officers were calling him and, they're looking for him. So apparently
wow. He
beat up a cop and he's on the run. So,
where are you finding? So this is just word of mouth.
Referrals from other people.
And okay.
Yeah. So it's not like I'm calling them, or the guys that do call me say they'll show up and then they never do. So, but yeah. So I've tried a bit of both, and so far the best option is just the guys that are already working and are, you know, qualified, hook up with them. You know, they have the interest, their lives together. You have the main common goal to work towards, and paying them is not an issue and they're paying me is not an issue.
Yeah.
And everything's easy. So
I only had one situation where the spray foam guy showed up and on time.
Yep.
But as soon as they opened up the cab, it was just weed. I was like, dude, it's 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
He goes, well, what's the big deal? I was like, what do you mean? What's the big deal?
Yeah. You're here to do a job.
You can't be on this site. He goes, what's, we were like just inside the cab. No problem. I was like, no, you can't be here on this site, man. If something happens, it's on me now.
Yeah.
I had to send them out.
Yeah.
Gone. I was like, send somebody else, man.
Yeah.
But apparently it was like a normal thing, especially in the spray foam industry, that they need to smoke up before they get spraying, I guess.
Oh, yeah, there's that and roofing too. Yeah. So that's always.
That's dangerous, man, because if something does happen and there's an investigation, then you as the GC, you as a business owner, like you can be on the hook and your business can be on the hook.
Yeah.
And then you're in serious trouble at that point.
Yeah. You have to pay the consequences for other people's actions.
Yeah.
So
like I didn't that was the only situation ever. Yeah. I've never seen tradespeople show up tired, you know, long week, whatever. Maybe they're having a bad day evening from their significant other or something. There was a fight or whatever, right? Yeah. Everybody has their own lives. Things are going on.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the extremes, like regarding alcohol and drugs and I just draw a line. I'm sorry, man.
Yeah.
Like I have no problem having a beer at the end of the day, offsite, just chilling, talking, great.
Yeah.
And you can smoke up all you want. I don't care. I don't give a shit. But start of the day and you're handling power tools and there's a client inside the house.
Yeah.
Like they're leaving before we get started. I'm like, if they get a waft of that, they're going to look at me differently, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're bringing people into my house that smell like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's a bad look.
At the time, she was third trimester of the pregnancy and they had a kid already too.
Yeah.
So I'm like, there's no way I want her to find out anything about this. Yeah. Right. Like you're going to have to leave. I'm sorry, man.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not good for you. So,
it's not good. You've heard horror stories. It's like it's on you now at that point. So it's like, and then did anybody ever teach you this when you started a construction company? Like, you're going to have to be this therapist. You're going to have to be this father figure or whatever, parent for these people. And I'm like, I just want to build, man. Like, I literally just want to deliver what I promised a client.
Yeah. You're kind of your therapist when you're there and you listen to their stories and stuff like that. And
do we need to put notes on the contract saying our guys will not show up smelling like weed or intoxicated?
Yeah, there might have to be a screening booth at the get them to walk in first thing every morning. Yeah, you're passed.
Well, that's kind of sad. I mean, if it gets to that point, but I just find it. I don't know. I've never really been one for vices, right? It's like I never, and I came from the film business before construction, right? Yeah. So, and there's like plenty of snow.
Oh yeah,
there's plenty of everything going on there, right? Yeah. And I was never influenced by it, but it was always there.
Yeah.
And then you get into construction industry, and you hear a lot about it.
Yeah,
that it's in there, right? So, and it's kind of it's scary. I don't want to be associated with it if there's actually a fatality.
Yeah,
like it was basically you don't know for certain if because of that person was intoxicated or influenced.
Yeah.
It contributed to that fatality.
Yeah.
I don't want that ever to be a part of my life resume, right?
No.
That's scary as hell.
Yeah. It's one thing you want to avoid.
Yeah. But nobody ever teaches that when you start a business and you think, oh, sunshine and rainbows and I'm going to have a construction company. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned the hard way with that one in the beginning with those guys. And so, but you kind of, in the beginning, you're like, oh, well, you know, it's roofing. It's part of life. But then you look back and you go, what if something did happen? What if the guy did fall off
just
the roof?
Just slipped, missed that.
Yeah. Something, you know, insignificant, wind blew too hard and off he went. You know, it's...
They would get tested. They would get, like, there's going to be an investigation, right?
Yep.
And so, then now you're responsible as a GC, right?
Yep. And then how is the homeowner going to view me? And am I going to get referrals or am I going to have somebody...
They'll speak about you in a negative way to anybody that you're potentially going to get work with,
go online and hit you up and try and, you know... burn your company as best they can. So
I just never understood people, and I've known other people, other industries that needed to smoke up the start of the day. And I just don't, me personally, I didn't understand that. Right.
Some people just have that, lifestyle, I guess is what you call it. They've created this, life for them where it's just part of their daily task. And they've convinced themselves they need to smoke up before they go to work because then I can think better or whatever. And it's more of a lifestyle part of that stuff. Some of it's addiction, obviously, with different things, but I think it's a bit of both there where you've convinced yourself, hey, oh, I perform better every day if I do this. And so it's, you see it all the time. That's for sure. A lot of guys, especially in the roofing industry, you know, they show up in the morning and they're half baked and jump on the roof and all that stuff, and away they go. So,
dangerous as hell. Yep. But I have no idea how we got into that conversation, but it's always good to see where the conversation is going to go. So what are some of the interesting things that you built?
There's a small house that I had purchased 2017. We gutted the whole thing, reframed the whole thing.
When you say small, how many square feet?
1,200.
Nice.
So a nice little bungalow.
It's good size.
Good for starting, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You get into some of these bigger homes, 5,000, 6,000 square feet. Like when you realize the process and how long it takes to get things done, just unloading your tools every day, you know, unloading your tools, loading them back in. You think you're going to be able to get something done in, you know, an hour. And then you look at the clock, you go, oh, it's 2 hours now, you know. So, but it was definitely a good learning experience from, you know, gutting the whole house, working with trades.
How old was the house?
70s.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and it was well built back then. Everything was still straight there. The ceiling joists were still, you know, they weren't bowed or anything like that. So we gutted that whole thing, reconfigured it. We ended up vaulting the ceiling, so it went from 8 feet to 12 feet. So that was a nice little feature.
How'd you change the... It was all probably... Was it
hand-cut? It was stick-framed.
It was stick... Okay, so hand-cut roof.
Yep.
So engineer can sign off on cistering or whatever.
Well, I got the engineer, and he ended up putting up LVL beams to go across the span 16 feet, I think.
Okay.
And so we had those on two sides, so the rafters kind of end up having a bird mouth in them.
Okay.
And we ran those across and then ran two more from the outside walls to the load bearing wall in the middle, and everything dropped on top of that. And then we wrapped those in barnwood. Nice. So they were hidden, and then the drywall just went up and spray foamed.
How much space did you end up getting?
12 feet. So we went
4 from
eight,
feet.
Yeah. We went from 8 to 12. Wow. And then everything was spray foamed up there. And
nice.
It just took the whole room and made it feel
huge.
A lot bigger. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was nice. The downfall is our oven was in the island. And so I couldn't figure out where to put the hood.
So did you go downdraft?
Yeah.
They suck.
Yeah. But yeah, and they're expensive.
And they're expensive.
Yeah. So I think it was $4,000 for that oven.
What was the pipe that you had to run? 8 or 10?
8. Yeah. So, but yeah, it was, you know, little design things you don't think about in the beginning. And then at the end, you're like,
there's no way to put a hood.
No. Like, there's I would no have a pipe coming down 6 feet.
The so, only option in that scenario, yeah, yeah, it's a downdraft. Yeah. But downdrafts just suck.
Yeah. So it's, it worked okay. And then you're always cleaning out the garbage and, you know, past the sauce gets in there and you're always cleaning out that crap. So, but yeah, it's just a lesson learned. You know, next time, keep the oven on the outside.
So. But it's yeah, I remember installing it for one client. And I just said, when I was reading and doing all the research, I was like, this is not going to work. And then sure enough, when we turned it over and tried it for the first time, was not impressed.
No.
Compared to what I know what hoods, like you, I've installed hoods that are like 1600 and plus whatever. And you like turn it on high and you're like, whoa.
You're getting sucked out of the house.
Yeah, like this, like this is like being at the airport or something, right? And then they turn on the downdraft. And I mean, there's a cool factor for it to go up and down and shit.
Yeah,
I'm like, that's great. I don't care about that, man. The purpose of that draft is to suck out all the cooking odor, right?
Yeah.
And smoke.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
Otherwise, you know, as per code, your smoke alarm that's not too far is going to go off all the time.
Oh, yeah. And those things are loud nowadays. You know, you got every single room has to have one and the whole house and the baby's sleeping. Not anymore.
No way. No way at all.
Yeah. So.
And then I think that there's rumors of, well, out west in BC, they have sprinklers now.
Do they?
I think they're enforcing them in the code out there.
In the whole house or the basement?
I'm not exactly sure. Yeah. I just know that here, depending on the municipality, you might have to put a sprinkler in the mechanical room.
Yeah.
Off a water line.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's,
but don't those have to be serviced every year?
That I don't know. I'm assuming.
I thought so. Because I'm assuming part of the, when you're doing legal rentals, I could be wrong, but I think if you're doing legal rentals and you don't want to connect the fire alarms from the different, dwellings, then you do need to have a water sprinkler in that mechanical room.
No, you're right on that because you could, either or do one.
Yeah.
I ended up doing the smoke probe and the interconnected, right?
And then I thought the guy was saying you need to service those every year just to make sure. Yeah.
Well, technically speaking, you're supposed to just service the smoke, the 3-in-1s or the 2-in-1s twice a year.
Yeah.
You're supposed to service them, right? And they're supposed to be battery backed up and then hardwired.
Yeah.
And then the probe. The probe is going to have to get serviced every time you change your filter. Now, typically on average, you're changing your filter, whether it's a MERV 11 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You're changing it probably 3 times, 4 times a year.
Yeah.
So you'd have to service that probe 3-4 times a year as well, too.
Wow.
So that's how people think that, oh, no, I want a home that's maintenance free. And I'm like, it doesn't exist there. No. I'm sorry, but it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Every home requires maintenance.
Yeah.
Requires tradespeople to come back in here to take care of what you need to take care of.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
Yeah. So I guess people think they bought a new house and that's it. You don't have to do anything. So it'd be interesting to see the stats on how many people change their furnace filters regularly.
They don't.
And then they wonder why their furnace is shutting down. And
it depends on their income bracket. Because if they're smart, I think they're going to hire an HVAC crew that offers that service and just put it on the calendar.
Yeah.
And then they'll just notify them going, listen, we need to get in there to take care of the servicing. Let's do the servicing.
Yeah.
Which is the best money spent, I think.
Yeah.
Because that unit's going to last longer.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Right. So, and people need to understand that, like, they only worry about that shit when it breaks.
Yeah. Exactly.
Usually in the dead of winter or when it's really hot in the house.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm like, it never breaks down when it's like the house is mild.
No.
You got windows open and all kinds of shit, right?
Yeah. 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 My parents just came back from Calgary from visiting my sister and their first wasn't working. And so the guy had a guy go over and tell him the heat exchange, 3 of the 5 heat exchangers were cracked and blah, blah, blah. You need to replace your furnace and all that stuff. And so I sent my buddy Steve down, who's an HVAC contractor. And he's like, I don't know how they saw that through a pinhole. He's like, I had to take the whole, you know, casing around the furnace off to actually see the heat exchangers, which are all fine. So
they were full of crap.
Yeah. Yeah. They were trying to scam them, sell them on a new furnace. So anyways, my HVAC guy got it up working, went back the next day, was still working.
What was the issue? Was it just dirty?
I forget what the issue was.
A lot of the new furnaces are so sensitive that if the filter...
Yeah, it's too strong. That's what my...
It shuts it down.
Yeah, that's what Steve was saying. It's like, stay away from those filtrates that are super high, and because you always have those issues where it just not enough air is getting through.
Yeah, that's what, and then it shuts itself down.
Yep.
Then you got no heat at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So, I've had that issues at my in-laws. They were buying all the filtrate, the purple one, I guess.
Yeah.
And, they were putting it in, and then it would shut down, and it would start up, and then it would shut off again because it was sensing, you know, not getting the airflow. Put in some normal air filters. It's fine. It's amazing.
I still remember this big job I did in Woodbridge. It started off by us just passing by because she's saying that the bedroom above the garage was always freezing.
Yeah.
So I already knew what was the issue.
Yeah.
But then she was telling me how she had her friend say, well, I think you need a new garage door. I'm like, okay, let me do this math here. And so all of a sudden the garage door guy comes by and he goes, yeah, the bedroom up there is cold because you need a new garage door. So he wants to sell. It was 3-car garage, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I said, listen, this is what's going on.
Yep.
It's not properly insulated. And I guarantee you that the 6-mil poly is not taped properly.
Yeah.
And whatever heat runs that are in there are not kind of connected or taped or properly done. Nothing's proper up there if you're not getting the heat. Because I went to the bedroom and I felt the furnace. It was on full.
Yeah.
No air was coming there. So there's like there's a disconnect somewhere going on here, right?
Yep.
So I said, in my opinion, leave the garage doors. We have to rip off the drywall here, right? Either rip off the drywall or rip off the floor up upstairs. Well, I'm not going to do that, right?
Yep.
So sure enough, we rip open the drywall.
Yeah.
There was 2 heat lines that were disconnected. All there was no tuck tape whatsoever on any of the poly.
Yeah.
And the way the installation was just like offcuts of bats just thrown in there.
Yeah.
And I showed it to them. I was like, good. And then we're going to rip all this shit out. And we spray foamed the whole thing, sealed up all the joints, taped up all the heat runs to it.
Yep.
And then we put the drywall back up. And then we started doing that. Then we got hired to do the basement. Yep. And then we were doing it in the winter. And all of a sudden she comes back. She goes, Manny, that room is the warmest room in the house now.
Yeah. Problem solved.
Are you getting new garage doors?
Yeah.
I just find it funny that you'll get those kinds of people that will just try to sell them because it benefits them.
Yeah. Like, what's the garage door going to do?
It's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
So. And I didn't even bother having the conversation about the cold coming off of that concrete slab on the ground, right?
Yeah.
Like there's ways of figuring out what is really the problem here, right?
Yeah.
And a good contractor is not motivated by what they can sell you.
Yeah.
They're motivated by actually taking care of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually had a customer last week. They called me and they said, oh, Jay, you did the roof, but we got a leak coming in. And I said, okay. So I went over there and... The leak, well, there was no leak, but there was water staining on the drywall, and it's a vaulted ceiling.
Okay.
And the water staining is going all the way across, not down. So I was like, okay. And then it was starting to show up on the other side. And I was like, all right. So I get on a ladder and I touch the drywall solid. So there's no dampness or anything like that. I hop up into the attic and I go over there. All the insulation that had been there was pushed down into the soffits. And they were all small pieces. So I was like, this house, maybe when it was built, it's a fairly new home. When it was built, they must have taken all the offcuts of insulation and just stuffed it up there. And it was all bare. And all you could see the poly in the back of the drywall and everything. And then the blowing in was maybe 5-6 inches. And I was like, this house was built 2015, I think.
Someone cheated.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the builder in that area.
Yeah, they just didn't do it properly. Yeah. Simple as that.
But so now he's got all these... The staining, I guess, from the moisture mixing and
condensation. That's all it was forming.
Yeah. So, he's got that issue. And so I sent him photos. It was raining that day too. So I sent him photos of rafters. No water coming in, nothing like that. There's no wet insulation. And I sent him the photos of everything up there. And so he's got I call an insulation company to get that solved. But, you get the first call there and, you get blamed for the damage done, and then you go up there and you show them that, and you realize, no, it was a guy that screwed you over, and this whole time you've been losing heat in your ceiling because You have no insulation.
But it had nothing to do with the roof. It's not shingles leaking. It's
no,
not.
No, like, nothing. There's no water up there. There's no water damage on the walls.
If there's actually a hole in the roof, it'd be a bigger problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
There'd be a lot more water damage.
Well, and it would gravity would take hold of the water and it would go to the lowest point, right? You could follow it.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense that water's going across the drywall. Water doesn't do that.
It was just enough condensation to just little travel path, right?
Yeah, and it's probably right on the tape seam so that it's following the back of the drywall. It was just one of those things. You get blamed for it, and then you go in and you find, it was the guy before, did a crap job, and this is why you have damage to your house. So
it's always a shame when you go into the attics and they hired someone to do, I don't know, retrofit of recessed lighting or whatever. They had to add an exhaust or...
Yep.
And they just make a mess of all the blowing in.
Oh, they just push it over.
Then they just don't put it back together, and they don't consider about maybe getting a bag of bat and just laying it down and making a nice little bed there, right?
Yeah, just doing like something to help.
Something.
Yeah.
They just leave it as is, however they were working, and then they don't even think about it. But then there's going to be a cold spot there. What's going to happen there? You're going to form condensation. Simple as that. That's just math.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the roofer's going to get the call. Our roof's leaking.
We got to do the 12 questions, Jason.
Okay.
Jason Ferris, Glenmore Custom Homes. Find him on IG at Glenmore Custom Homes. And his email is jason.ferris@glenmorecustomhomes.com, 647-332-5516. This has been great, man. Thanks so much for the conversation. I didn't even know half the stuff that you were telling me about out west there. One day I'll show up out west. And
you can Google it or YouTube.
Yeah, I'm going to look it up and check it out, but it's a fascinating world, right?
Yeah. It's things we don't know about. So,
what's your favorite construction word?
Probably fuck.
Least favorite tool?
Chainsaw.
Yeah, that open blade, eh?
Just the fact that it could kick back. Just makes you, you see some of those guys in the timber framing and they're doing it, nose first into the bottom of the timber for the blades to hold them up. And what if that just came back one day? Your leg's gone.
So, what construction sound do you love?
Nail gun.
Pneumatic?
Yep. Yeah, roofing, framing. It's a nice little sound.
Are there? Yeah, there's roofing battery guns, right?
Yeah, DeWalt one. DeWalt has one.
They're heavy as hell, no?
I don't know. I stay away from it. Consistency of like the Hitachi and stuff is it's fine. That's all you need, and it's not very heavy.
What's your favorite beverage?
Probably beer.
Which one?
Stella.
I have chalices. Eh?
Do you?
Yeah.
I like it. It's good beer.
Good beer.
too good sometimes.
What turns you on and off in construction?
When people are late, that's annoying. And you're waiting there, standing, waiting for people to show up. And
never understood that. Everyone shows up on time.
Yeah, or like 15 minutes early is on time.
Right? Yeah.
Like, what happened to those days where it's like, all right, like you set your clock.
Just made it.
Yeah. Or whatever, like just set your car a clock 5 minutes, ahead of. So you know that like you'll be there 5 minutes early if you're following that time. So.
No, they don't do that.
No, nobody's.
What turns you on?
Finished product at the end and the customer is just super happy. And you're willing to give your name out to other people. And
of course.
Yeah.
Totally. Favorite curse word?
Fuck.
Favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
McLaren F1, I think. The original when you're sitting in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What are you talking about? Carbon fiber.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you miss from your childhood?
Freedom. Carelessness.
Yeah,
that's a good being one. Able to jump on the skateboard and just do whatever as the day goes by and
try to figure out how do you cover up wounds
exactly
before mom and dad could find out.
Yep, yeah. Or the day where growing up, I used to be able to walk down the hydro fields by myself. In elementary school, never a worry that it's unsafe or anything like that. Go play down by the stream or whatever. And,
I know.
Yeah,
grass higher than you.
Yeah,
I know.
Yep.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Veterinary.
Are they?
Yeah.
You guys have pets?
Yeah. I've got a dog and,
what kind of dog?
He's a lab.
Black or brown?
Yellow.
Oh, yellow.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like the Marley and Me lab. The chews all the shoes and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And great dog, but he just wants the attention 100%.
Like, what's his name?
Charlie.
Charlie.
Yeah.
Vet's kind of nice until those moments when they go.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's gotta be hard for that. It's nice to work with different types of animals, like you know, if you could work with gorillas or something like that, or you know, understand that life. So yeah, you got the silver back.
What profession would you not like to do?
Teaching.
A teacher?
I don't think I would be a good teacher.
Any, like elementary, high school, or post? Skilled. You could do skilled trades.
Yeah, skilled. I think just dealing with that elementary, maybe high school, I wouldn't be able to deal with the talking back and the rules we have nowadays of leniency and, you know.
Can't beat kids anymore.
That's the issue.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Your kids are going to be okay. You've been a good dad, a good husband. And yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So thanks so much, Jason. Appreciate it, man. Yeah, thanks for taking the time off of work. And you going right back to the site?
Yeah. I was working down Third Line in Lakeshore.
Oh, it's not too far.
Yep.
Nice. So, okay, cool.
Yeah. It's just convenient. It was in the area. So
we make it that way.
Yeah.
No, we didn't want to be in the Toronto area. No. We wanted to be in this area. So it's all good.
Yeah.
Thanks. I really appreciate you, man.
Yeah. Appreciate you coming down.
Okay. We're out of here.